At Market District, we believe in the power of great taste, like juicy heirloom tomatoes, cheesy house-made pizza, and fresh artisan-made bread. From produce to meats to chef-made meals, discover great taste at Market District.
Hanging out at the pool is great. Relaxing and playing Vegas-style games on my phone at the same time. Drink in one hand and a blackjack in the other. It's all at SpinQuest. Over 1,000 games, including your favorite slots and table games. Be cool with this summer special. New players get $30 coin packs for 10 at SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Third hour, Darren, Donick, and Chase here on ESPN 102.5, the game on this Monday afternoon. Hope everybody's having a good day thus far. Darren McFarland, that's me down here in Rutherford County in Smyrna. Willie Donick over in East Nashville, where he's been hanging out for, gosh, 3.5 months. I don't know how long we've been doing it from home at this point. Marquise Munson back at our Wholesale Link Game Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. And on Mondays at high noon, we bring in Vince Ferrara. Covers all things Vols for WNML, the sports animal, at Vince Sports on Twitter. And he now joins us. Vinny, how you doing?
Good, guys. How you doing?
Doing fantastic. Thought I would start with something that we had on in the cabin in Gatlinburg. We were in your neck of the woods for the last 4 days. And because there wasn't much live sports, and the UFC is one of those live sports, right? And they had a fight night. Mm-hmm. Card on Saturday night, so we did have it on the fight night, and come to find out that in one of the fights, it was Austin Hubbard and Max Roscoff. I don't know. I hope that's how you say his last name. Mm-hmm. Where, and I guess Max Roscoff was kind of a late entry, right, into this fight night card, and in between rounds, he had asked his quarterman, being Robert Drysdale, who I guess is well-respected in the sport, to call the fight. And in Ariel Helwani, I know I've heard him do interviews on ESPN. He said reportedly asked his cornerman 9 times to call the fight in between the second and third rounds, and Drysdale refused to throw in the towel. Well, luckily, the Nevada State Athletic Commission had someone right there on hand, and which they always do for fights, but overheard the conversation and stepped in and said, told the referee that he needs to look at this fighter, and indeed the fight was called. What do you make of that? This is a pretty unusual, this type of conversation, you're around the sport and you're involved in this. You know that sometimes fighters do this, and cornermen, it's their job to, like, pump them up. So there's, like, this fine line, right? There's this fine line of hang in there, keep battling, keep going, keep pushing. That's kind of their job, be the hype man and, you know, keep them engaged. It's a tough, tough sport. But there's also that line when the fighter is saying, hey, I'm done. Like, literally, I'm done. Like, I can't do this anymore. And I think we've got the audio. I think Marquise has found the audio. So let's play that, and then we'll get your reaction.
All right, we got this, champ.
Call it.
Listen.
Call it.
Huh?
Call it.
You're going to beat this guy, Max. We got this.
Yeah.
You're going to beat this guy. Listen,
call
we got
it.
No, listen.
Rob, call it.
No, we got this, Max. Okay? Stop it. We got this. Hey, breathe. Okay? Catch your breath.
No.
We're going to beat this guy.
Call
keep
it.
Keep it on feet. You're going to clinch.
No, call it. Call it.
You sure you wouldn't lose the Max?
Yeah.
We got this,
I don't
Max.
Want to do this anymore.
No, we got this, Max.
No, I
you're a champion.
I don't have it.
You're a champion. Stop it.
I don't have it.
Stop it. You're a champion. You're a champion. We're going to finish this round on top of it and move for decision. Okay? Get on top of him. Out wrestle him. We got this.
Let's go. One good hold right here.
Now remember,
you want to fight or no?
He wants to call it.
He wants to call it.
So there you go. So you remember, they don't have fans. And so usually a normal UFC situation, those arenas are very loud, and it is hard to hear anything. You've sat ringside, Vince. But in this case, a lot easier to hear the dialogue, as you just heard there. What did you make of that whole event?
Yeah, and I also saw the video where they put up the graphic of everything they were saying in case you couldn't make it out. And you could see the frequency that the fighter Max was saying, I don't want to do this anymore. I don't want to do this anymore. And it's a bad look for the corner. Now, I will say this. We don't know what their relationship is, the corner with the fighter when they're in training. Maybe that's something that the fighter has told them before in training, and they've motivated him and said, no, keep going. And then he's excelled and finished off and done well. We don't know that aspect. I haven't heard the defense for the corner, but that's just something to keep in mind, that maybe that's why the corner took that approach. If they've been able to get him to fight through his own obstacles in training in the past. So I'm going to put that out there to say, I still think it's ultimately, whether that's a typical motivation tool or not, it is the responsibility of the corner to make sure that the safety of the fighter is number one more than winning and anything else. And this is unfortunately becoming a more common thing in MMA where the corners are being heard. And Amanda Nunes is his opponent in her last fight. When they sent her back out there for the fifth and final round, she was getting absolutely destroyed in the fight, had no chance to win, had no power to do anything, couldn't get Nunes on the ground. It's over. It's protect your fighter. And so I think the corner has to, regardless of what the background is, has to have more of a presence than a motivation. To me, the motivating happens in training. The safety of the fighter and the strategy is what the corner's biggest role should be. It shouldn't be necessarily motivation during that time. Everybody's different. I get that. But I wasn't a fan of them sending Rozhkov back out again, especially on short notice. And you know, I was happy that Dana White came out and said, look, anyone criticizing him for going out there, you don't know what you're talking about. It took a lot of guts for him to go out and do that. Now, it really hurts him, I'm sure, to get another future UFC fight. But, hey, if he goes out in another organization and maybe gets on another win streak, maybe he gets another opportunity. It was a tough look for him, but a worse look for the corner. And seeing it too frequently, more so in the UFC and then on the national organizations, them trying to motivate and keeping that Hail Mary alive rather than protecting their fighters first and foremost.
Yep, good stuff. We had a really good conversation with Chris Sanders in the first hour. He's been a high school coach, assistant coach for many, many years at NBA, just kind of talking about coaches talking amongst themselves about the way they conduct themselves and how they talk to their players. I know you guys had T. Martin on the afternoon show, and he was talking about a culture committee with the team. How did that conversation go?
Well, he mentioned it during, and I thought this, the days of football coaches just being football coaches and the whole stick to sports stuff, that's gone. You have to be a mentor. You have to help those athletes, especially on the college and high school level. You have to be much more than just a football coach. And it's what they are doing on a daily basis at Tennessee. T. Martin mentioned how one of their first initiatives to try to help with the social justice issue in this country is they are getting, they're almost done getting all of their players registered to vote, and they're making it easy for them. They come into the office, they bring in their ID, and they do it right there. It just takes a couple minutes to get registered to vote. And he said they're almost done with the entire team and how important that is. He said he had never done that, been around a team where they had an initiative to help players get registered to vote in the past. And so it's just the way of the world right now. And then also he mentioned the next step is to educate the players on who the candidates are and what they stand for. And you know that's going to take some time. They'll have guest speakers. I'm sure they'll give them things to be able to research and find out more information and make sure that they make this an important part of them, of their lives, and not just be only about football. So it's, you know, they've taken great steps. He, you know, clarified Jeremy Pruitt's comments when they were talking about the black jerseys. And Jeremy Pruitt had mentioned the black jerseys that they're going to wear in the Kentucky game was for Black Lives Matter. And to me, when I heard that, I interpreted that as the movement and without specifics, but that was clarified by T. Martin and UT that the money that they will get from those black jerseys that'll be auctioned off will go towards local organizations because there was, you know, a backlash. A lot of people didn't want the money to go to the National Organization of Black Lives Matter, but it makes sense to give it towards local organizations. And you know, the players, it just shows that, you know, they're doing things. They're deciding things. T. Martin also mentioned that there are 11 players that were a part of that culture committee with a couple of more that had recently mentioned they wanted in. There's white players and there's black players in that committee. And he thought that that would continue to grow over time and that they are appreciative of the University of Pruitt, of Fulmer, of giving them a platform to be able to have their voices heard and get some things done. And they've clearly started with action. What can we do right away? And they've started on those things. I'm sure they have bigger aspirations, but I thought it was really interesting in how he broke down the steps and the things that they're trying to accomplish short term.
Running back Tim Jordan was arrested in Florida, and he is no longer on the team, according to Jeremy Pruitt. So what does that do for the running back position?
Yeah, and he's officially in the transfer portal now, so I just saw that. And it's not a surprise. You know, when you have that, when the team is over in scholarship numbers and you are not an elite player or a starter and you mess up like that, these are the kind of things that can happen to you. You know, Jordan was – you know, a factor in the rotation. He was probably for a good part of the year the number two back for Tennessee until Eric Gray emerged late in the year. And is a tough runner, but he's not an elite player. Tennessee is a little bit thinner in terms of experience now at running back. You got Ty Chandler and Eric Gray there as your top two guys. Carlin Fields and me is a guy that has been injured, hasn't played a whole lot, doesn't really seem to be much of a factor, I think, moving forward. And then they have two freshmen that are joining that group, a big back and Laneith Whitehead, 6'2", 230, a freshman from Athens, Georgia. Then T. Hodge, who's from down the road in Maryville. He's another bigger back, 6'1", 220. And then Jabari Small, who's a little bit more of the smaller, speedier back. He's from Briarcrest Christian in Memphis. So three of your six now scholarship running backs are two freshmen. So that opens the door for one or more of those guys to contribute quickly. And there's other guys that I think can get snaps if necessary from other positions, some wide receivers that you can use in the backfield. You can be creative and do a lot of different things, but it doesn't change the top of the running back group in Chandler and Gray. Those two, I think, were still going to be the top two backs for Tennessee. Just a skosh thinner now without Jordan.
I saw where Pro Football Focus had Tennessee as the fourth toughest schedule in the country. Do you agree with that?
Boy, that sounds a little lofty for me. I think Tennessee's schedule certainly has difficult teams on it. I mean, in some preseason polls, depending on which one, but I've seen one that has Tennessee's top four opponents all ranked in the top seven in the country in some preseason polls. So from that standpoint, it is really top heavy. And those definitely challenges Oklahoma, Georgia, Florida, and Alabama. The thing is that maybe I'm comparing it to other years. Tennessee has those games spread out this year and not in consecutive weeks in a gauntlet like we've seen them in years past. And so Tennessee does have that advantage. And, you know, when I went through it, when I blogged and went through Tennessee's schedule, there's a number of games that the schedule actually favors Tennessee going in. Alabama will be playing their eighth consecutive game when they face Tennessee, while Tennessee comes in with a bye week. Now, South Carolina that'll be the fifth straight game for South Carolina. And South Carolina will have played back-to-back tough road games prior to playing Tennessee. So there's other slight advantages from Tennessee's standpoint. You still have to win the game. But I think in the non-conference after Oklahoma, all of them are, I think, very winnable. And then there's a bunch of games after that in the middle to where those will probably be the swing games and how your season goes. Even if you beat one of those top four and you make a statement around the country, well, you can't lose to someone you're supposed to beat or favorite to beat and give that game back. And so I think there's it's a mixed bag, and I think it's a tough schedule, but top five most difficult. I'm not quite sure if I would go there, even though all the SEC schedules are going to be on the tougher end.
All right, we'll come back more with Vince Ferrara on the other side of Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Segment number two with Vince Ferrara from over in Knoxville, WNML. Another comprehensive look of what's going on with University of Tennessee. We covered a bunch of it in the first segment. We've got more coming here. So, Vince, let's get to your conversation with Philip Fulmer and some of the things that he envisions here. Let's start with, because we've been learning about all these challenges, some programs across the country getting the players back, and there's a certain amount that have tested positive, and maybe some workouts have been shut down in some cases. So you talked to Coach Fulmer. Give us a couple of notes from that interview.
Well, he sounded optimistic that, or maybe his optimism was because of hope that there would be, you know, football with fans this fall. And that was actually one of the things that stood out, was that he feels like they absolutely will have fans in the stadium this fall. And right now, because of all the positive tests that are popping up, I think some people are starting to question even beyond that. Are we looking at football at all, much less fans in the stadium? So he was still optimistic. Granted, there were other positive test stories that came out after our conversation. We talked to him in the middle of the week. So that was noteworthy. And then also he mentioned all the money that the athletic department was giving back to the university. Now, it's not a donation, but it's money that the athletics department pays back to the university for expenses like, you know, renting buildings and, you know, upkeep of facilities and scholarships, those kind of things, rather than the way Tennessee used to do it and a lot of other schools, where it'd just be a flat-out donation. But, you know, the money he talked about totaled about $19 million annually. Now, there could be a little bit plus or minus that, but I thought that was noteworthy. And his exact quote, by the way, on fans in Neyland Stadium is, quote, "We're planning on absolutely having it full." So, you know,
full.
Again, that, yeah, that's optimistic. But he also mentioned that they're planning for all scenarios as well. So I think that, hey, we're taking a positive approach here. We're doing everything we can to make sure it's full. Buy our season tickets. So, because it's another thing he mentioned, is they're at about 90% of season tickets. He thought those sales are still going well, and there are still plenty of people that are taking that approach as well, that, you know, hey, we're best case scenario. I don't want to get left out if it is open. So I think people are still doing that. And then, you know, we obviously talked about non-conference scheduling, which I might get into as well. So, you know, he was overall very positive, and I thought that was interesting.
Well, that is, I mean, I understand the concept of you got to plan for all scenarios. And I guess it's an interesting thing that people are still investing in the tickets, not knowing what that is going to entail. So that could be tricky, too, if they find, okay, you have, did you say 90% of the seats accounded for with season tickets?
Well, of the season tickets sold, that's not 90% capacity. That's of their season ticket allotment. He said about 90%. Yeah.
So I'm just wondering if you have a 50% capacity or 40% or whatever they determine is the right number, how do they account for the demand?
Well, it's interesting, Willie, that you followed up with that, because that's what I asked Philip Fulmer. If you don't have it at full capacity, who gets the tickets? How do you determine who gets to go? And he laughed and said, well, Vince, maybe we'll let you decide. And I wished him good luck with that plan. And don't at me if you get left out of the season.
You're not interested in that job, Vince?
No, I don't want to be the one to decide, because it's a virtually impossible task. You're gonna make almost everybody mad. And so that's something I'm sure they're still working out based on his response. And it's definitely a huge question mark. And look, if you get your season tickets now, even if there's a 10% chance that they'll be at full capacity this year, I think some fans look at it as, hey, I have the money. I don't want to get left out if things turn for the better and it is at full capacity. And if not, I'm going to get my money back. When, that's a different story. But if you have the money to do it, I think fans will take that approach. I'd rather get a spot, and then if they have to send me my money back, then I'm cool too.
Or I guess you could use that towards future games. I guess the
probably
money you've already put down, I would guess there's options there.
Yeah.
So it's interesting, especially you think about a place like the SEC where you have rabid fan bases to start with. You have, in this case with Tennessee, a team on the rise, expectations going up. You know, not every college football team is going to have that type of demand. So they're going to have to be ready for a lot of directions there. Now, you mentioned the scheduling down the road, Vince. Tennessee is last in the SEC in future Power 5 non-conference games scheduled?
Yeah, this is something that I've been looking into, and I did ask Philip Fulmer about, because, you know, Tennessee's non-conference schedule not that beefy or impressive. There's not a whole lot of meat on that bone. And their Power 5 non-conference games are Oklahoma twice, including this year, home and home, Pittsburgh, home and home, Nebraska, home and home. That's it. That's all that's been determined. They have six Power 5 future non-conference games scheduled. They have a total of 15 games scheduled in all. They have 8 group of fives and 1 FCS on their total schedule. They even have an open spot in their non-conference schedule next year, which is the earliest opening for a non-conference game out of anyone else in the league. And so I said, all right, this is thin. A lot of SEC schools are starting to go away from the one Power 5, two group of five, one FCS pattern that so many of them have had because of how difficult the SEC schedule is, and because they can get away with it because it hasn't hurt them in the playoffs. But the Georgias, the Alabamas, the LSUs, the Floridas, a lot of them are scheduling up in non-conference and going to multiple Power 5 games in non-conference. Well, in comparing Tennessee with everybody else, it was an even bigger gap than I thought. Georgia's number one in the SEC in those future non-conference Power 5 games scheduled. Georgia has 36 scheduled. Tennessee has 6. In fact, Georgia has
36. How do they schedule 36?
Well, here's a little bit, and this is a caveat. Is Georgia has the annual game with Georgia Tech. So That's going to 2037 is as far as ahead as they went for some of those schedules. So there's 18 there. But they still have 18 others scheduled to Tennessee 6. That's 12 more games at 6 home and homes that you're behind one of your biggest rivals within your own division. Now, I get it.
So why? What's the strategy?
Well, the strategy is tougher schedule, so there is no question for the college football playoff if you do get left out there. You won't be the decision.
No, I'm saying, what's the strategy in not scheduling? Because I think sometimes I think we all sit there and go, why are you scheduling a game for 2029 right now? Right. It doesn't make any sense. So I get that if you're trying to do it differently, as long as you end up with what you want. I'm just curious as to the thinking behind this strategy going against what so many teams have done for so long, and that's scheduled way out in advance.
Well, again, you're all over it, Willie, because I did ask Philip Fulmer if they were planning on scheduling more difficult in the future, like a lot of other schools in the SEC did. And he said, when I first got the job as AD, I said, gosh, why don't we play two Power 5 non-conference games every year? And he said then after being on the job for a couple of years, he quickly learned, hey, we're still fighting to try to get in the mix in the SEC, and so that will come in time. Let's take care of the ones we got in front of us first, and then those other games will come in time. And there's some fans that feel that way. They don't want to make the schedule any tougher than it already is, especially when they see people listing them as the fourth toughest schedule in the country. You want to go add another Power 5 school there. I get some people think that way. However, everybody else virtually is doing it in the league. And if you wait to schedule those games when you're good, one, there's not going to be as many opponents that are available to you at the time, so you have to schedule farther in advance. And then when you do eventually play those games, guess what? You might not be good again anymore at that time. So you have to do this work in advance, and you also, in my opinion, have to show the confidence with scheduling that you have shown and displayed in every other way in Jeremy Pruitt. If you believe in him, schedule up in advance, and then those are going to be where you'll be in a better position for national spotlight and playoff competition, and that you're not afraid to play that competition. I don't think Jeremy Pruitt is. I'm not saying Tennessee's afraid to. I just think they're taking a conservative, let's win and get back first approach. But some of these games are going to end up being scheduled so far in advance, things could change during that period. So it's just their philosophy they're going with right now. I'd like to see them take advantage of the opportunity that big games will present to them. And you'll learn more about your team in that way as well, I think.
Well, it's always been an interesting topic of how that happens. I don't know why they don't just have a rule or didn't make a rule years ago. You can't schedule a game more than 2 years or 3 years in advance, whatever it is, because, like you said, it sort of pulls everybody else down this road. Well, everybody else is scheduling way ahead. We got to schedule way ahead. It doesn't make any sense. I want to hit you with one other one, Vince, before we let you go. You have a stat here. Jeremy Pruitt has more decommitments than anybody in the SEC over the last 31 months. What is the significance of that? Is that a bad thing or a good thing?
Well, they had a decommit, Kamar Wilcoxon, a high four-star DB that had flipped from Florida to Tennessee. Now he flipped back. He's actually he's committed to Florida on three separate occasions now. So he's had four total commitments during this process. We'll see if
he likes done. Committing and then decommitting. I mean, come on, just milk it for all it's worth. Why not?
So he's a noteworthy decommit, but he's only the second in the 2021 class. I'm not saying by any means it's something to worry about. I just think it was noteworthy because his Pruitt's first year, where you can understand, hey, Pruitt players versus Butch players. There was a lot of guys that left and came. So you can have a little bit of that. He had 12 decommits his first year, 5 the second year, 12 last year, but they ended up with a really good class in the end. And then so far they have 2 here. So the totality of it is 32 in about a 31-month period. which is one more than Dan Mullen, who's got 31, and then a number of others in their 20s. So it's something to keep track of, but it also shows that there's going to be some guys that are going to move on their own, and they're going to be others that are going to be asked to move on. I think there's been examples of both so far in the 2021 class, and it's just another reminder that this is going to continue to be in flux with the craziness of 2020. And so I don't think people are just running away from Jeremy Pruitt. I think this coaching staff is aggressive to get on guys early, and guys are going to change their mind for various reasons or be asked to look elsewhere, and I think you can expect some of that to continue.
I just think that kid may be indecisive, really. There's no
evidence of that early on. So,
gosh, four times, really? Did he check the wind? Is there a wind pattern you come out of? Oh boy, this feels like a Florida day. I think I'm going back to Florida. Let's check on it. Wet the finger. Let's go back to UT.
He did mention in his video where he committed to Tennessee that Florida was his dream school, but he learned about Tennessee and it was, you know, family atmosphere and things like that. So he hadn't avoided that that title, that description that he had out there. But he went back to a big time when he announced he was flipping back to Florida. So what does Tennessee do? Does Tennessee say, enough, we're done, we're going to look at other DB targets? Or are they going to say, hey, it's a kid being a kid, and we'll get him back. And then, you know, once we get him on board, then he's good, and he'll work out because he's such a talent, because he is. So it'll be interesting to see how Tennessee – approaches that moving forward as well.
I think what I just learned is he doesn't believe Dan Mullen has a family environment at Florida. So that's what I just learned from all that. Vince, good stuff as always. Really appreciate it. You have a great week, and we'll talk to you next Monday.
Yeah, you guys do the same. Thanks for having me.
Vince Ferrara at Vince Sports on Twitter. It's with the Sports Animal, WNML, there in Knoxville. And we always appreciate his Monday visits. Another city has been told by the NHL, you're not going to be a hub. And also two historical places here in Middle Tennessee, in our city, in Nashville, are going to reopen their doors. We'll tell you who all these things apply to. On the other side of Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Looking for a way to show your support for teachers before school starts again? Well, you can sign up to sponsor teacher supply bags through Together for Teachers, a citywide campaign from the nonprofit Pencil to support Metro Nashville Public School teachers. That's throughout June and July. So this month and next month, you can celebrate over 6,500 teachers in your local community. Learn more about Together for Teachers campaign at thegamenashville.com. That's our website. Pencil is Nashville's premier nonprofit, linking resources to Metro Nashville schools to help students achieve success in school and in life. So hopefully you can get involved in that. Appreciate Vince Ferrara for joining us. We will have Bob Nightingale join us to kick off the final hour. He covers Major League Baseball for USA Today. That's coming up at 1 o'clock. I was just reading where the Ryman Auditorium and the Grand Ole Opry will reopen this week for daytime tours. In fact, the backstage tours at the Opry House will be held this Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, and will return for daily tours next month as well. The Ryman will have self-guided tours that will start tomorrow through Sunday, and backstage tours of the Ryman will not be offered during Phase 3. So this is all part of Phase 3 that we talked about at the beginning of the show, where Davidson County has indeed moved into Phase 3. So just thought I would pass that along. And it looks like another city has been informed by the NHL. They will not be a hub city for the return to play for the National Hockey League, Willie, and it looks like Minneapolis is now out of the mix. Columbus and Minnesota, now you can cross them off the list. So we have learned today that they have whittled it down to 8. And I would
don't
think
know.
With everything going on, that probably shouldn't serve as a giant surprise.
I, I think it's got to be the first thing that pops into everybody's mind, right? What
sure.
What has happened up there? Did that affect the decision there? Because
how
it looked
could it
like
not, right.
How could it not? Right, and you know, there was all those things we discussed initially, well before the George Floyd situation, that all the ice, the couple different arenas, all of the programs that have, you know, practice rinks that you could go to, it seemed very practical. I don't know, you know, so we can't speculate on why, but, you know, I've been hearing for a while, like I said, we had Elliot on Thursday, and at that time, and we're talking about, you know, 4 or 5 days ago now, it looked like, I mean, it was being widely circulated that Vegas looks like they're honing in on one of the spots and then a Canadian city in the other, which would be either Edmonton, Vancouver, or Toronto. So it looks like that's been the picture for a while. So what would that leave, Darren, if it's the three Canadian cities and Vegas? What are the other four cities that have not officially been eliminated or reported to be eliminated?
Well, you've got Chicago and L.A.
Okay.
So you said the three, so Edmonton,
didn't
Toronto,
you say that's
Vancouver,
down to eight?
Right, because Columbus and Minneapolis are now out of the mix. So you've got the three Canadian cities that we just mentioned, Edmonton, Vancouver, and Toronto. You've still got Vegas, so that's four. Los Angeles would be five. Chicago would be six. And I'm just going off the top of my head. I'm trying to think two cities would be
Pittsburgh. Was that one?
Pittsburgh was one. Yep. Pittsburgh was one. So that leaves one more. Pittsburgh and
Carolina.
No, I don't think they were not on the
list.
There
wasn't in there. Well,
so we said
Columbus.
So
it looks
Dallas.
Even more.
Was it Dallas on the list?
Dallas, I think. Yeah.
Dallas was on the list. Yes. So that leaves Chicago. So Columbus and Minneapolis are off the list. That leaves Chicago, Dallas, the three Canadian cities, Vegas, Los Angeles, and Pittsburgh. That would be the other eight.
I had a source. I hesitate to see. I'm not a person that uses that term very often, but I had somebody text me this morning saying that that person is hearing that it is Vancouver and Vegas, as long as Vancouver gets everything settled. But that's just one person sending that along to me. I don't know how much you can read into that, because I think you were hearing a strong case for Edmonton based on their campus, right? They have these enormous practice rinks, huge arena, big hotel that was built adjacent to it, where you literally don't have to go outside to get into it. So it's conducive to a bubble. But again, we're talking about 12 teams. So where do they all stay? All of that stuff. I think if you gave people the choice, would you rather be in that in that area in Vancouver or Edmonton? And does it even matter, right, if you can't go see the sights of the city anyway? I don't know. I guess we'll learn more in the next few days. But it feels like I think I saw early this week is the target date to announce it. According to Elliot, is what he told us on Thursday.
Well, doesn't it feel like they're kind of, because they're just waiting on the Canadian government, right, to basically relax on the 14-day quarantine, correct? I mean, that's what it feels like. They're kind of waiting for them to move off of that, with the announcement today that Columbus and Minneapolis are out. Doesn't it feel like they're, because remember, we talked about this a while back, that teams were not going to sign up for a 2-week quarantine to go to a Canadian city, right? Before all this starts. Like, they're not going to do that. Like, they don't have the extra time to do that on top of what it's going to take to start everything back. They don't have the extra 2 weeks to do that. They're not going to go 14 days in advance, you know, before all this starts up. So it does feel like they're waiting on the Canadian government to make a decision on that. And I feel like if you're saying this week and maybe even early this week, somebody's got to know that maybe a decision is coming. Doesn't it feel that way? Like they're also getting ready to maybe come out with something on that front.
They would like to. And another thing that Elliot Friedman shared with us is that they have recommended, they can't force anybody to do it because it's not mandatory, but they've recommended to people who are in the various countries outside of North America to try to get back by June 29th, I think he said, in order to give yourself a little wiggle room, a little extra time to make sure you can sort out all the visas and the the quarantines, all of those things, so that you don't put yourself in a position where you're not ready to go on July 10th, which is when everybody wants to start the actual training camp.
It feels like Vegas is a shoe-in, but do you think there's a chance it could be two Canadian cities? Do you think that's even been discussed? If they were to come out and say, okay, you don't have to have a mandatory 14-day quarantine, do you think there would be an opportunity? Because you said, like, the Canadian cities lay out probably the best of anybody. True?
In terms of number of sheets of ice to work with, and the other part of it is, I think it's safe to say, and I was, you know, Elliot, I think, said as much, that there's less cases up
true.
There than yes. there are in the States, mm-hmm. right? And we know Vegas, Vegas today is one thing, right? But Vegas in a few weeks, that's the thing that has you going, I don't know. I mean, that place is just not conducive to distancing. You know, you're walking up and down that strip, anybody who's been there or walking in anywhere, there's just people everywhere.
Yep.
But again, what does it mean? Because the players are supposed to be in the bubble anyway.
Bubble, so
that's what we don't know.
Yeah. With Minneapolis, because we knew Minneapolis / St. Paul was equipped to handle this. I mean, they do have a very good setup. But with them being now crossed off the list, I'm just curious if maybe there is a discussion piece if that were to – that right now, that stance be, taken away and taken out of the – out of the picture of the 14-day quarantine to enter Canada. I wonder if they are saying, okay, if we know that's going to go away, like, I wonder if they're now having discussions of, okay, what about like Toronto and Vancouver, or Toronto and Edmonton, or Edmonton and Vancouver? Like, I wonder if that's been passed around, the room on Zoom or what have you.
I'm sure it's been passed around the room. I mean, you have to feel good about anything. I don't know what would be, if those were the best two cities, if you just determine all things considered, it's just better to have those two cities. If they both happen to be in Canada or both happen to be in the States, then so be it. I don't know what kind of backlash that would be, but I think, one in Canada and one in the States makes a lot of sense for sure.
Mm-hmm. Right. So maybe we will get those answers this week with this news coming out today while we've been on the air that two cities have been informed or two franchises have been informed they're out of the mix. I guess it does seem like maybe they're trending for a decision this week. If news is starting to trickle out at the beginning of the week, maybe they are well on their way to us learning of the two hub cities in the NHL's return to play. Meanwhile, MLS and NBA are headed to Orlando, and there's questions with players, having concerns, and there's questions of Florida is not like Canada. Florida is doing just the opposite. Their numbers keep growing in positive tests, and so, but they, they're locked into that scenario, so. You do wonder, and as we will find out from Bob Nightingale at 1 o'clock, how is Major League? But by the way, it's been quiet, and I don't know if quiet. Usually, quiet can be a good thing, but sometimes quiet can also be a bad thing. I don't really feel like quiet right now, considering all that we've learned on the Major League Baseball front. I just don't think it's a good thing because they haven't been quiet. Right? This has been a very public debate. And we've said that is the horrible. During these times, a public debate over money is a bad, bad, horrible look. So they haven't been quiet at all to this point. To me, I take quiet as bad. I don't take it as good. That's just me.
I only saw Buster Olney's essay yesterday. I read it, the Father's Day, you know, theme, kind of a plea, as if he were Rob Manfred talking to the owners, what he would do. He had another tweet about an hour ago or less than an hour ago that basically suggested, what if Rob Manfred, because I guess it's so quiet, he might just have to go ahead and implement the 60-game season for better or worse and hope that there's no grievance and hope that the players go ahead. But he said maybe they do 102% of the prorated salaries and maybe that sparks a discussion. I don't know, but I don't see a whole lot of people tweeting about it. And don't you think there's just, I know I'm in this case. I'm just fatigued. I can't have another week of reading articles about the bargaining. I'm just done. You know, let's just go. And if I'm fatigued, I got to believe that Rob Manfred and Tony Clark and those guys are fatigued. Just end it. Just somebody declare a victory and say, we have a schedule. And at this point, if it's 60 or 66, I mean, come on. That's an extra week. Every game is great. I'll take it. But if 60 is the number, 60 is the number.
Yeah, I think we've made it abundantly clear on this show, just like a long line of people, that people are more than fatigued. They're fed up. They're just, you know. So I don't know. We kind of said it last week with all this, that it was definitely the first time through all this where I actually had thoughts of creep up in my mind of, I guess there is a real shot that they're not going to. Like, I've just kind of figured, even with the back and forth early on, that they'll figure this out. Like, they're not truly going to step away and not play this year. I don't have those same thoughts. Like, I do believe that they're real. It is very real that there could not be a season. In my mind, I really feel that way. And I don't, like I said, there's really nothing. I don't know if there was anything right now that could have me lean toward feeling positive.
Well, when you,
unless they just came out and
but
said,
but when
it.
You left, when we left the show on Wednesday, was your last show, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then that night was the night that they had the heart to heart, right? The one-on-one meeting between Tony Clark and Rob Manfred,
and so at that point, still didn't get it done. That's when I was like, yep, that's trouble.
Yeah, but
still
that looked like that, because on that day I was with you. I was really starting to say they may not play. And then I was encouraged after that meeting, only to have us again do the dance of no counterproposal, and this is not what I said. I didn't agree to this and all of that. So I'm just done. I'm done. I can't talk about it anymore. My brain is fried. Just tell me you're playing or that you're not playing. I'm done. Yeah. I do think that the players got the owners a little, there was a little bit of sway in public sentiment, I'd have to say, from a lot of the major writers saying, guys, your franchises, you just got a $3 billion deal from TBS. Your franchise values are huge. Even the Royals, the Marlins, the smaller market teams have values for the franchise that are way, way more. So you've got to be able to come up with a few extra million bucks to get the season up to the prorated salaries at a decent amount of games. That seemed to sway them a little bit, but they're stuck, you know, between 60 and 70, I guess. So I don't know. We'll see what Bob has to say. Plus, you know, all this is that they had to shut down the spring training sites because people were testing positive down there. That's the other wrinkle.
The thing I learned over the weekend that we were talking about in the cabin that I wasn't even aware of, and we never brought it up last week unless you guys did on Thursday or Friday. I didn't even know that there was this push to, or I guess it was an article that was written for the Rangers to change their name, which obviously they came out and said we're not going to, but I didn't even know that was a story. Till this weekend when they came out and said that they're not going to change their name. I guess there was a column that was written. I didn't even know that was a story. Did you guys talk about that Thursday or Friday at all?
No. Yeah. No, I didn't even see it.
Yeah. But the Rangers came out and said that they were not going to change their name from the Rangers. Right. We will come back and we will have a baseball discussion with Bob Nightingale. He covers MLB for USA Today. We'll do that to start the fourth and final hour of Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game.
This is Troy Millings from Earn Your Leisure. On Earn Your Leisure, we're all about smart money moves, and here's one most people skip. Car insurance renews on autopilot, the rates creep up, and nobody tells you. That's what Insurify fixes. In about 2 minutes, completely free, you can see rates from more than 120 top insurance companies. And if there's nothing better today, they keep watching and notify you when there's a better rate. So go to Insurify.com. That's Insurify.com. Insurify.com.
At Giant Eagle, we believe in better. And that includes finding more ways to help you save. Because finding a good deal is everyone's deal. Because every dollar and every moment counts. On sale this season at Giant Eagle, you'll find lower prices on hundreds of favorites, like seedless grapes, ground beef, Giant Eagle American cheese, and more. Giant Eagle. Because it matters. Limited time only through September 9, 2026. Prices and participation may vary. See store for details.
Hey guys, Lady Luck here. Are you going on any road trips this summer? I know I'm going to be going on a bunch of road trips. And being that I'm going to be passenger princess, I love playing on SpinQuest.com. SpinQuest has all of my favorite slot games, live blackjack, live craps. Head on over to SpinQuest right now and get yourself a $30 coin pack for just $10.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.